This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, we are finally past all the exit ramps, all the extra arenas, all the nonsense, because now, to April 2nd, there is no stopping us on the road to WrestleMania. Welcome to your home for everything modern-day flamethrower, otherwise known as WWE, Place to Be Nation's Main Event. I'm your host, Scott Criscolo. Great show tonight. We are finally past all the extraneous secondary pay-per-views and all that nonsense, and now we can focus on the big show taking place April 2nd at Campers World Stadium. I think that's what it's called now. It's the Citrus Bowl in Orlando, Florida. And I'm curious. I'm going to talk to my two gentlemen tonight that I have on the show, and then in 3 weeks, not 2 weeks, 3 weeks when we have our next show, which will be our big mega WrestleMania preview, I want to compare the two cards from this coming April 2nd and what we had, what would it have been, 9 years ago, I guess, at WrestleMania 24, which was the last show in this building, which, of course, ended with The Undertaker as your WWE champion when he beat Edge. But, of course, I will always remember that show for the retirement of my favorite wrestler on the planet, and the greatest wrestler to ever lace up a pair of boots, Nate. But that's in a few weeks. Let's talk about things going on at the moment in WWE. But first, let me bring in my guests. Now, I had pimped the hell out of this for a couple weeks on both the Place to Be podcast and the last Main Event. We were supposed to have the great Steve Willey on tonight because Steve Willey was at Fastlane Sunday night in Milwaukee, but a family obligation precluded him from being able to join us tonight. But that is all right, because Steve will be with us in 3 weeks for the big preview. But his pinch hitter tonight is a great guy. It's his second trip here to the Main Event. He is all over Place to Be Nation. He has been on here before, Mr. Chris Jordan. Chris, welcome to the show.
How you doing, Scott? Nice to be here, man.
Good to be with you. I love talking to Canadian Texans. You have that weird morphed accent, whatever it is. Yeah, damn, Owen Hart. Great to have you on, Chris. Thank you for joining us on such short notice. This guy was scheduled to be on for a while, and I love talking to him during WrestleMania time because he is my spirit animal when it comes to booking. It's funny. I talked about him for 400-something episodes on the Place to Be podcast until he finally got on, and now this is his second main event in, like, I don't know, a month and a half. He is the mysterious... The Enigma. No, not Brother Nero, but the great Johnny Reckless. Johnny, welcome back.
What's up, guys? Great to be back.
Get your Paul Heyman hat on, because we're going to be doing some serious booking tonight. Because, gentlemen, we are on the road. No more exit ramps, no more chambers, no more fast lanes, none of that nonsense. We are smooth sailing between now and April 2nd in Orlando. Let's recap Sunday night quickly, though. Guys, curious about your thoughts of Fastlane, which, of course, concluded with the predicted squash of Kevin Owens in 21.65 seconds. That's according to what Wikipedia had. In 21.65 seconds. I didn't have a problem with it. I know you're all thinking I'm insane, but I really didn't have a problem with it, and I'll explain why when we get to it. But here are your results. On the pre-show, Rich Swann and Akira Tozawa defeated The Brian Kendrick and Noam Dar. That was in 9:25. Now the show proper, Samoa Joe beat Sami Zayn in 9:45. The club retained the red nickel belts, beating Enzo and Cass, thank God, in 8:40. Sasha Banks defeated Nia Jax in 8:15. Cesaro beat Jinder Mahal in 8:20. Big Show defeated Rusev in 8:45. Those two matches were added at the last minute. Neville retained the Cruiserweight title over Gentleman Jack Gallagher in 12:10. Roman Reigns defeated Braun Strowman in 17-13. Bayley defeated Charlotte to retain the Raw Women's title in 16-55. And as I mentioned, Goldberg defeated Kevin Owens to win the Universal title in 21.65 seconds. Not exactly King Kong Bundy and SD Jones, but pretty damn close. Chris, give me three observations you took away from Fastlane in general.
Well, the most obvious with the main event, Goldberg taking down Kevin Owens in 21.65 seconds. I actually had a feeling that maybe they were going to keep the title on Owens there. And just have Goldberg, Brock Lesnar wrestle, you know, in a regular straight-up non-title match. Because they don't really need the title for their big match. So I was a little bit surprised that they went with it. But, you know, at the same time, not surprised. Because it was obviously the safe booking choice that they went with. Mm-hmm. So that was my observation on that one. As far as the overall show, it was really, you know, just meh. You know, just one of those shows. Just things didn't seem to be clicking for them. And there was a couple of bright spots, but overall the show is mostly lackluster. Mm-hmm. And I guess the highlight for me was watching Braun Strowman carry Roman Reigns to a watchable match.
You really think that?
I'm not as hard on Roman Reigns as, you know, most people seem to be. Just kind of Josh and Roman there a little bit. But I thought Braun Strowman was, I think he's really come into his own a little bit there over the last, you know, few months. The way they booked him looking strong, and even his promo work has improved, and I think they've got something with Strowman after all this time now. You know, they really wanted him to be something when he first joined the Wyatt family, and they were saving him for, you know, the big matches and keeping him outside the ring, not really, you know, wrestling wise. But I really believe now, you know, having seen him over the last, you know, several months, that they might actually have something with the big guy.
I thought that I'll talk about this match because I really enjoyed it, and I was excited for it. And Johnny, we were watching it together, you, me, and the doctor, so you knew my excitement for it. I've always been a fan, and for those that have been, you know, reading on the website or listening to our podcast for 7 years, everyone knows I'm a big fan of you know, big Haas matches. You know, I don't need flip-flop and flies. If two guys could tell a story just by, you know, clubbing blows and power bombs and that kind of thing, that's perfectly fine with me. Johnny, did Roman Reigns, I know you're not a big Reigns fan, but you're usually a pretty diplomatic guy, though. you like that? You like how I kind of softballed it there?
That's what we're talking about, Bonnie.
Did both of them show you something after that match Sunday? Or is your opinion really not changed of either?
My opinion really hasn't changed about either. But that being said, I mean, I've never been a guy to bury Roman. I just think they should turn him heel. That's my whole thing with him. I think in ring, he's better than good. I mean,
right.
The guy, you know. And Strowman, the last couple months, has just really grown on me. The guy's really got the potential to be something pretty big.
Hmm. And I think leaving the Wyatts, because I thought it felt at that point the Wyatts were kind of on a weird area where I don't think they needed extra guys. And then he kind of lost weight. He got a bit more really jacked instead of just fat, which it seemed like he was when he was in the Wyatts. And I agree with Chris Jordan, with Chris. I think his promo skills have definitely improved. He's much more succinct without kind of fumbling his words. I'd like to say that about Roman, but I don't know if promo-wise he's really quite there yet. Johnny, what do you think of his promo skills? I know we've talked about the Suffering Succotash and all that kind of stuff, but Do you feel his skills have improved on the stick? Is he still stuck in neutral? Over the past year, since a year ago when he beat Triple H and became the world champion, has his, I would say kind of a package thing, has his promo skills and his charisma combined, have they improved? Have they gotten better, do you think?
Maybe slightly. I think the issue we're running into is not the skills or charisma per se, but how it's portrayed. Because the guy really has kind of a natural, arrogant, too cool for school attitude. And instead, they're trying to push him as that John Cena babyface, which I think you, if you leverage it more towards the edginess of him, I think those kind of more towards the heel side, more towards being in the middle there, I think you could do a lot more with what he has.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Chris, what do you think? I mean, since he beat Triple H in Jerry's house a year ago, in this last year, do you feel he has grown on the mic and grown, not his work, not his in-ring work, but more of his charisma, his ability to put his message over? Has that gotten better, say, in the last year, do you think?
No, I think he's in the same place he was a year ago. I really haven't seen anything improved in him. One thing I noticed about him is that he has this failure to connect, I think, with the crowds. We don't know who he is. I mean, what's his character? You know,
That's a good point.
He comes off. He looks like he might be a badass, but then he rhymes off some promo that was obviously written for him. And it comes off as badly rehearsed when he spews it. So basically, I think he needs to develop more of a persona to that, you know, people that can resonate with people, so they have something to get behind, whether it's a heel or a face.
Let me ask you that, Johnny. Do you think that's a good point, Chris? Do you feel he is somewhat detached from the audience? He's no Stone Cold, he's no Rock, but then again, that's rarefied air. There's very few guys. I mean, obviously Cena, but maybe that might still be a big issue for him, is that he is somewhat detached from the audience, and that he's not connecting, and he's just kind of a guy who happens to be in the main events or in the upper mid card. What do you think about that, Johnny? Do you think detached is a good word for that situation?
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think the issue it probably is where that disconnect is coming from. Is the character he's probably being asked to play is not really him. And if you look at, look at all the greats, really. I mean, Stone Cold, I think, said years ago that all the greats, is a piece of themselves turned up to 11.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whereas I don't think any of those lines coming out of Roman's mouth are him at all.
Right.
You know? So I think that's where the disconnect is, and that's why I think there's a disconnect with the audience. Because if he was genuinely using his words and his attitude, people might either love him or hate him, but it'd be a more genuine reaction.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that's a fantastic thing you've tapped into, guys. Maybe it's not necessarily him as a standalone character. Maybe it's not his ability to work or his ability to proclaim his mind or speak his opinions, but it's the connecting with the audience. It's just kind of, he's hitting the wall. There's no, why should they be invested in him? Because he's just him? You know what I mean? Like, why are we, he's not getting his stones broken anymore. He's not, you know, it took John Cena a long time before he even came close to overcoming the odds and overcoming the vitriol of the fans to where at least he gets over half of them, I suppose. And it's getting, I think as he gets older, it's going to flip. The younger fans are going to kind of grow up from Cena, while the older fans will be like, all right, he's old and grizzled now. We're okay with him. But Roman Reigns, and this is key, I think, over the next whatever the hell it is now, 27 days or whenever you're listening to it, between 27 and 25 days until we hit Orlando, because now he's at a different level. You know, Triple H, the title last year, I know people were 50-50 on that storyline, and that's fine. But this is different. This is different. Because now he is in the yard with the big dog. We'll talk about that in a minute. I want to stick with Sunday night, but we'll get more into Roman Reigns and the detachment of the fans, because now he needs them, unless he is going to turn heel. But we'll get into that. Let's talk about Goldberg. Is being the Universal Champion that big a deal? Is it really that bad? Because like, this goes back to the whole universe thing. And Johnny, I'll start with you. This goes back to the whole thing I've talked about for the last couple years. The fans' favorites, not the baby faces, but the guys everybody loves, the armory wrestlers, the guys in the fucking gym, the Daniel Bryans. Once they lose, you know, they have to win, hold on to the title forever, or else everything sucks. And this may be another case here. Kevin Owens loses in 22 seconds. However, it was a great mind game, and he got caught. It wasn't like Brock at Survivor Series, where he just ate a spear, ate a jackhammer, and moved on. It seriously was a mind game with Chris Jericho. And now we will have Goldberg versus Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania for the Universal title. And Johnny, we were going to get Brock and Goldberg anyway. We're going to have Owens and Jericho anyway. It's going to be for Jericho's U.S. title instead of the Universal title. But if the two matches we're getting were going to happen anyway, why are the belts suddenly changed the tone of them? Like, let's put it this way. If it was, let me clarify the question. I put a lot of pros into that, but let me clean it up. If it was Goldberg and Brock without the belt, and then Owens and Jericho say title versus title, how much different is that compared to what we have now? Like, why would the fans matter? The belts, is the fact Goldberg have the title really change it up that much in your eyes?
Well, I think there's kind of two answers to that one.
Okay.
If you look at it from a mainstream perspective, not talking people like us who follow the product, but you know, Mania tends to go for the casual audience. You know, they want to get everybody. So if you look at it from that perspective, Your most marquee match is Goldberg Lesnar. Those are two biggest names on the show. And if you add the title to it, you know, the casual fans will be like, oh, wow, this is really important, you know? To us, you know, to your hardcore wrestling fan, no, I don't think the titles change anything. Goldberg Lesnar is a big match either way. What I think is going on, though, from my perspective, is Goldberg Lesnar does not need the Universal title, but I think the Universal title actually benefits from being in that match, because Goldberg Lesnar, I hate to say it, and I'm a huge fan of Kevin Owens, mm-hmm. are much bigger names than him.
Right. That is true. And this goes back to the question that Justin, that JR always brings up when we've talked about WrestleMania over the last few years on any of our shows. The other 11 pay-per-views, well, let me get your, before I expand on that, Chris, give me your thoughts on the same question.
Yeah, Johnny made a good point about the Universal title needing Goldberg Brock, mainly because, you know, for the first, how long has Owens had, did he have the title for? It was
since
a few months.
Third week of August?
Yeah.
Probably?
And that whole time, he was locked up in this friendship angle with Jericho. Mm-hmm. And I really thought that was a mid-card angle. But, you know, he's the show's main champion. And it should feel like a main event angle. And I think they had something with Owens there just before he dropped the title, where he came out in the suit. You know, he had the spotlight in the middle of the ring, and he was, you know, cutting these you know, real good promos, and I thought maybe they were going to, and that's what made me think that they were really going to, you know, have him retain the title.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he suddenly became a serious main event type looking guy. But, I mean, the Universal title really had the stink of mid-card all over it because of the whole friendship angle with he and Jericho. So, I mean, this is, I really think Goldberg-Lesnar, it does not need the title, but it does elevate that title and make it seem much more important than it has over, you know, the last several months.
I think, here's the thing. The last time, you guys bring up a great point about the Universal title as a belt. The last time we had the brand split, we had the WWE title, which is easily, obviously, the belt. I mean, it's Bruno. It's the Bruins belt. But the last time we had the brand split, we had the World Heavyweight Championship. Now, WWE started their own lineage, Triple H getting it handed to him, blah, 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 the same bullshit. I get it. But that belt, the belt itself had already been established. And who wants some loser like Rob Van Dam holding it in? Sorry, John.
I knew that was coming.
Go back to selling comic books. Now, here's the thing. At that time, the World Heavyweight Championship, even though WWE began their own lineage with it, it was still the big gold belt. It's still Ric Flair. It's still Dusty Rhodes. It's still Sting. It's still, you know, it was still a belt that had a lineage going back to Harley and Orville Brown and all those guys. This time around, and I was there, I was standing in the suite at Barclays last year when they unveiled that belt, and everybody looked at each other and said, what the fuck is that? Like, I knew the rumors were true that the belt was going to look similar to the other belt, the belt, of course, being right now held by Bray Wyatt. We'll get to that side of the ledger in a few minutes. But there was rumors they were going to make it reddish because they wanted to identify it with Raw. Somebody, I don't know where it was, Johnny, I know you got excited about it. Somebody had put a mock-up on like Google or whatever of a upgraded winged eagle. Now that would have been sweet. But then we got this. Same belt, too much red. Somebody told me that they should have either had red leather and kept the plaque black, or kept the plaque red and made the leather black, but then it would look like the other belt, so that would probably not have worked. So I think the whole fact that the belt still looks like a toy is kind of killing the buzz of it, and that's why I think, Chris, you're right, that it does seem like a glorified Intercontinental title. So I really do think that, yes, Goldberg and Brock Lesnar, with that title on the line, gives that title some extra prestige. Now, if Brock wins, and I think most of us seem to think he is, will we have the same thing we had in 2014 when he prison raped John Cena at SummerSlam, and then we didn't see him between Night of Champions and the Rumble? Can Raw handle that? That depends. But I think the point is very clear that the belt needed to be a little bit elevated. And this is not a knock on Kevin Owens. And let's talk about Kevin Owens, Chris. Why did the angle with Jericho seem like a mid-card feud? And you opened the door on that, and I like that. So let's think about that. Why did the Owens-Jericho feud feel like a mid-card feud?
I think really it was played up for a lot of comedy, which, you know, you usually don't get from when your title holder, your main title holder, is involved.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was good for, the angle itself was fine. You know, it was funny and it had a good payoff. But the fact that your main title holder was involved, it just, that title around Owen's shoulder, it just seemed like a prop. It just made the title feel like a prop. You know, this guy's the champ, but here he is playing it up for yucks. And I just, I just couldn't buy Owens into it, man. I need my champ to be, you know, the top dog and act like it, and, you know, taking on all comers and not cowering from them. And so it's just, I don't know, it just had that feel of just, like you said, like an intercontinental title feud more than anything else, mainly because of that.
Mm. Now, Jericho was brought in as part of that feud to help elevate Owens. And instead, it felt like he got himself over more than he got Owens over. Do you agree with that, John?
Well, yeah. I think got himself and the list over.
Yes, you know, yes, he did.
So, but I don't think that was intentional at all. It's just Jericho's that good. You know what I mean? I definitely think he was trying to get KO over. It's just Jericho, you know, he just has that charisma about him. No, most things he does succeed very well.
Mm. Yeah, however, instead of being elevating Owens to a main event level, and I think a lot of it had to do with Reigns and his presence, as well as what was happening between, Seth Rollins and Triple H. And we'll get to that in a minute because that one's perplexing to me. So, right now, we have those two matches in, and I really think that Owens and Jericho will be a perfectly fine match. I think Owens wins the U.S. title that day, that night. And is he dumped down the card? Nah, I wouldn't say that. I think he's fine in that aspect. It's just a question of, will Brock doing the same thing he did, Chris, in 2014, he wins the Universal title, maybe he shows up on Raw the next night, and then we don't see him for a few months, and we work with some of Raw's other talent, like we did in 2014 when he didn't show up between Night of Champions and the Royal Rumble. Will him taking the belt with him on his sabbatical actually help the Universal title? What do you think, Chris? If he wins.
Well, yeah, in a way, I think it will, in a small way, mainly because suddenly your main champion is, back in the day, you know, before we had, you know, live 3-hour shows and we had shows in syndication and your world champ made the, you know, once or twice a month TV appearance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it made it seem special. We didn't have, you know, 12, 13 pay-per-views a year, you know, 4, maybe 5. And, you know, your champ showing up on TV on the rare occasion was, you know, it was a special moment. And it kind of got that feel to it with if Brock holds the title. However, you know, since we're not in that era anymore and we've got, you know, a dozen pay-per-views a year to cover.
Mm-hmm.
In the long run, I really think that will hurt booking wise because, you know, you can't book, you know, Brock, he's not going to appear on every show.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Yeah. And you can only run, main events with, you can only run Roman Reigns versus Braun Strowman or Chris Jericho versus Kevin Owens in your main event, you're lucky if you can do it one time. And after that, you've got to book a title match somewhere along the way. And I really think that it's a small benefit in, you know, kind of prestige wise, you know, keeping your champ off TV. But at the same time, it handcuffs you from a booking perspective. And that's something that they need right now is some good booking.
Right. And obviously there's a lot more pieces on Raw that will help, that I think will be huge coming out of WrestleMania. And then, of course, we have our obligatory rumors of who will be, you know, graduated from NXT. We won't get into that tonight because that's just a multiple variables. On top of the fact, we don't even know what TakeOver Orlando is set for yet. I think, and somebody asked on one of our chats today, you can almost guarantee that at least two matches that Saturday night will be the Bobby Roode Nakamura rematch which you can give me 1,000 of those, because that match in San Antonio was awesome. Some people thought it was better than any of the Nakamura Joes. I think they're a different kind of match, but Bobby Roode just proved what kind of a professional worker he is, which is why I've been a fan of him for, you know, 15 years. And I think we're going to see Asuka drop, finally end her run, and she'll lose to another one of my favorites in NXT, Ember Moon. And Asuka will be on one of the shows, one of the two shows, either the Monday night or Tuesday night after WrestleMania. Now, let's talk about the women. Let's stay on Raw for the rest of this segment, and then in the second segment we'll talk SmackDown, because I got a bunch of other questions about that, issues on that side of the ledger too. All right, Johnny, we talked Bayley and Charlotte. We watched that match together. It was a good match. It wasn't a great match, but it was a good match. But is the well finally starting to run dry on this Raw women's division? We finally tapped Charlotte, tapped Bayley, tapped Sasha Banks so much that now they've become, shall we say, I hate to say it, ordinary.
Yeah, I think they went to some of those feuds or programs too soon. That's also the nature of having 3 hours and, you know, 12 pay-per-views a year. You burn things out much faster than you should. I still think it's a strong division. It just needs a shake-up. And I think because of their lack of new blood in there, they're suffering from some very strange booking, especially of Bayley.
Yep.
Yeah, basically, I mean, Sasha and Bayley to me are coming across as heels with their tactics. Where Bayley is really the equivalent of a female John Cena. Nothing like that should ever come near that character.
Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the main problem they have, especially when they ran this Charlotte-Sasha feud back and forth, trading wins, I mean, that kind of ruined the specialness of both, I think. Because one just did not have a clear-cut advantage over the other. It was just trading the title back and forth. And that ran the risk of... You just ran that match one, you know, maybe one too many times. And then you bring Bayley into the mix. And I think Bayley has connected as well as she did down in NXT.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are fans that, you know, still get behind her, but there's just something seems to be missing with her here on the big stage. I really think her title run here. I'm surprised that they didn't wait until Mania, really, for her big blow off win to win the title. I think that would have been more appropriate for her chasing Charlotte until she finally got her at Mania. But Bayley hasn't really gotten to the level, I think, that both Sasha and Charlotte did in their feud.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem to be the three, you know, main individuals that they're running out there. And it needs to be freshened up a little bit. And yeah, I think some new blood in there. You never know, down the road they might run, you know, another draft, like they used to do, run a draft every year, and then we could, you know, get some fresh blood on each show. But as it stands right now, yeah, I think it's kind of stale.
Yeah, I feel like the women's booking got a little lazy the last couple of months, and I definitely do not like the kind of hot-shotting that Bayley got on Raw. And we're going to have a triple threat, which was anticipated for the second straight year, the same three, sans Becky Lynch, with Bayley in her place. But the next night on Raw, we definitely need a change. They definitely need. Everyone says that Asuka needs to go to SmackDown, and I don't see that. Asuka needs to go to Raw. They really need to, and they need to start elevating Dana Brooke. They need to do something, because the same booking and the same, you know, three girls. I mean, three separate feuds are going on SmackDown Live right now in the women's division. Three involving women, the women's wrestlers, superstars. And on Raw, you can't do that right now. It's all one big feud, kind of like the Cruiserweights, which we'll get into when we talk on SmackDown, because even though they are on Raw, technically they wrestle on Tuesday nights. Excuse me. The anomaly right now, the last piece we'll talk about on Raw, and then we'll take a break, we'll come back, and we'll talk about the Blue Brand. What is the situation with Seth Rollins? Johnny, time for me to finally tap into your inner Paul, because you are the sensei. And it's already set. You're inducting him in 2028 into the WWE Hall of Fame.
So I'm ready.
So get the speech ready. You're booking this. All right. You don't know if Seth Rollins is healthy come April 2nd. Triple H cut a pretty good promo last Monday night. So the question is, what do you do between now and April 2nd if Seth Rollins is not wrestling? What are you doing?
I guess I would tease some dissension between Triple H and Joe. Nothing major, just enough where maybe Joe kind of is like, I'm my own guy. I don't need to listen to you. And if Seth can't go, then you turn it into Triple H Joe.
That would be interesting.
I mean, that's the only backup plan I could think of. Because you want to involve somebody who's already in that feud, you know? So Joe kind of fits in there.
Joe is the big variable come post-WrestleMania. Let's talk about Joe, Chris. Well, first off, what are your thoughts? How do you, if you were booking, what do you do over the next 20-something days if you have no idea what's happening with Seth Rollins? What do you do between now and then with him and Triple H? Do you just not have Triple H talk a lot? Do you kind of tiptoe around the storyline? What do you do?
Well, the first thing I would do if I'm booking, I would ask Triple H if he really, really, really needs another WrestleMania moment. You know, if Seth Rollins isn't wrestling, you obviously can't do Triple H and Seth Rollins. If Triple H absolutely must be on the show, maybe you do maybe some kind of angle, you know, a non-wrestling angle with him and Seth. Maybe where, you know, Seth in some form or fashion gets one up on Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Johnny's idea is also good. You know, maybe Samoa Joe doesn't feel he needs Triple H, and we get something between the two of them that might set that up. Be a hell of a match, but I don't know. I think really we need, you know, if Seth can't go, I really think it needs a non-wrestling angle. I mean, let's face it, we're looking at a 365-hour show. So there's plenty of room for, you know, a 15-20 minute dueling promo segment. I mean, we're going to get something like that happen anyway. But let's just make it Triple H and Seth, you know, dueling promos, and then, you know, Seth maybe walks off after taking Triple H down in some way.
Yeah, it's hard to say right now. And by the time we are back again here on Main Event in 3 weeks, when we do our official WrestleMania preview, we'll know something, I hope. But I think right now Joe is the wild card here, because he could just keep, you know, destroying guys, and that'll work out fine. You know, because after WrestleMania. No, go ahead, Chris. Go ahead. What do you got?
No, I was just going to say, would it be a waste to put Joe in the Andre Battle Royal and just have him wipe everyone out and win it?
Absolutely not. What do you think of that, John?
That's fine. I mean, I think that's actually a good idea if you're not doing anything else with him.
Yeah. There's no one else right now on either roster that really needs to win it that badly. I mean, you know, Apollo Crews made the huge announcement on Talking Smack. Crickets. yeah, I would put him. I think that's what's going to be the case, Chris. If he doesn't have to do something with Triple H, then I do see Joe going into the battle royal and probably winning it, wiping guys out and taking the trophy. I agree 100% with that. Guys, fantastic discussion as we talked about the Monday Red Brand. Why don't we take a break here on Main Event? When we come back, we'll go to the next night, and we'll dissect how things are on SmackDown Live right now, because we have our title match on that side, and we've got some other things kind of brewing on the blue side. And then we will, in our history segment, our history corner, we will pay tribute to one of the greats who passed away yesterday, and Monday or Tuesday, and that was Cowboy Ron Bass, who died at the age of 68. From a ruptured appendix. So if you feel pain in your gut, don't be a tough guy. Johnny Reckless, Chris Jordan, Scott Criscolo. More Main Event after this.
PlaceBitNation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceBitNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the PlaceBitNation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous vintage wall pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit clotheslines and headlines, our steady veteran Main Event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and, Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular PlaceBitNation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceBitNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceBitNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceBitNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name. Now it will be known simply as Pro Wrestling Only. So it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
And welcome back, Place B Nation, to the Main Event. Scott Criscolo, Johnny Reckless, Chris Jordan. We were talking Raw for segment one. We will get into SmackDown momentarily. But first, PlaceBitNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Today we continued our WrestleMania Listomania every day between now and April 1st. We are going to do a different top 10 of a certain thing involving WrestleMania. Today, of course, day 9, we did top 10 greatest opening matches. We'll get to that in a second. But first, guys, I want your opinions on the first eight. So we went all the way back to the last day of February, the 28th, and we did the best WrestleMania opening credits package. So, Mr. Jordan, your favorite WrestleMania opening credits.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I'm kind of partial to the original there, Scott.
He's an easy lover. To get exactly. A hold on you. Oh, it's awesome.
Exactly.
So awesome.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it sells the show right from the opening bell. Then you know you got the and then Vince and his voice runs down the card.
That's right.
You know how it goes.
First of all, Reckless, don't you ever laugh at my Philip Bailey impersonation, okay? There is only one Philip Bailey. That is true. And what sucks is the network didn't even pay for it, and we got that crap, canned Jim Johnston music, which was really lame. I would have just paid for Easy Lover. Yeah, that's pretty iconic. Johnny, your favorite opening package?
Yeah, this is probably not everyone's, a strange one, but I'm going to have to go with 13.
I like 13, where they pretty much say, no one is happy. Everyone is miserable.
So different. You know, it just didn't feel like a Mania opening, and I think that's why I always liked that one.
It was attitude before attitude. Really, this think about it. Mm-hmm. No one is celebrating. I kind of dug that. I have to agree with you. I'm impartial to 17. When they go through the whole thing, you know, is that the one that Freddie Blassie does the piece? I think it is. I like 17, but I might have to agree with Chris. I think I'll always love Little Easy Lover. Mr. Reckless, best WrestleMania theme song. And that also includes the two instrumentals.
Okay. I can't remember half of them, so I'm going to have to go with the, I think it's the second instrumental.
The Linda theme?
Yes, that's the one.
I think of Lawrence Taylor every time I hear that one. Chris, your favorite?
Definitely My Way from 17.
Because all you think about is Rock and Steve giving each other their finishers. That's pretty much all I think of when I think of that. Yeah, absolutely. Mine will always be they call it the grand spectacle. You know, that's to me, that's my childhood. That's my rite of spring as a kid. The NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, spring training baseball, the NCAA tournament, and WrestleMania. And every time I hear that theme, I know I'm ready for, I'm pumped. You know, the ultimate challenge, you know, in the images of space, things happen, or what is it, begin to occur, or whatever the hell Vince is saying, lunatic. Chris, your best WrestleMania set.
Let me think about that for a second.
Mm-hmm. Mine, and I'm partial because I was there live. I will always love WrestleMania 29 at MetLife. Love the Statue of Liberty on the little roof thing. I love the big Brooklyn Bridge. And I love WrestleMania 29 set, and I love MetLife. But
yeah, I think 9, WrestleMania 9. I mean, you may not get a lot of love for
the set's better than the show.
Yeah, exactly.
But you have to say that, you know, it's funny. I have to say that for a show that was, you know, obviously fairly awful, Vince did the best he could that day with turning, like, just random generic outdoor venue into the Roman Coliseum and everything. I have to give him credit for that. They did a pretty damn good job of setting that building up. I like that, Chris. That's a gutsy pick. Johnny, your favorite set?
I mean, I hate... you know, I hate to agree with you, but being born and raised on the East Coast, 29, that was just awesome.
It was awesome. I'm telling you. And being there, I mean, that's different, but it was tremendous. Absolutely tremendous. Johnny, best national anthem / America the Beautiful performance?
Ooh, that's a good one. Probably Aretha. WrestleMania 3.
Miss Aretha Franklin! Chris?
Ray Charles, definitely.
Yep, that's what I go for. I love Aretha too, Johnny, but I got to go with Ray Charles at WrestleMania 2. There wasn't many highlights of WrestleMania 2. He's probably the one big one. So
now does WrestleMania 6 count? Because that was O Canada.
Oh, Robert Goulet, damn straight. Yes, Robert Goulet does count. Complete with
that was great too.
Great hair and awesome mustache. No, we love Robert Goulet. Big props here in the Place to Be podcast. JR and I are huge Robert Goulet fans. This one, to me, is a no-brainer, but I'm curious what both you guys think. Chris, best WrestleMania announce team.
Yeah, the original Gorilla and Jesse.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little surprised. I didn't think you'd pick that, but okay.
No,
I'm not surprised getting to know you since you said Easy Lover is your favorite open. Johnny?
Well,
go ahead, Chris. Sorry, finish point.
No, it's just, you know, just their interplay with each other. I mean, they just had just a natural interplay with each other, just made the show that much better.
Okay, Johnny.
God, there's no question. It's Gorilla and Jesse.
That's who I picked. It's them. Steamboat. I mean, there's so many great moments. Steamboat Savage. We won't do favorite match tonight because we haven't put that one on the site yet. But them calling that match, Andre Hogan, and then Jesse in his last Mania, absolutely destroying Sapphire. 450, 550. I might buy. Cause Dusty's only 275. Oh, fantastic. I love Jesse.
What I will have, the thing about Jesse was he just made it feel big.
Right.
He made it feel important.
He understood when to put away the heel thing for a bit and realize, holy shit, this match is gigantic. And exactly. He said it. He hit the two best lines ever at WrestleMania 3. During Savage Steamboat, even though Gorilla kind of cut him off at the end, when he said, this is one of the greatest matches I've ever seen. And then, of course, when Hogan and Andre are standing in the ring, Gorilla vamped, and Jesse nailed it. This is the biggest match in the history of professional wrestling. Sorry, that's the one most important line said by an announcer in the history of WrestleMania, my opinion. Chris, best WrestleMania tagline.
Let me go with the Mega Powers Explode.
Oh, that one's fantastic, Johnny.
I don't know. I'm partial to the Ultimate Challenge.
I like the Ultimate Challenge. I also like Houston. We Got a Problem from WrestleMania 17.
What about the Raging Climax?
See, I like the Raging Climax a lot, actually, as very Ron Jeremy-ish as it sounds. I love the Raging Climax, which, in case it's not coming to people's heads, that was the tagline for WrestleMania 15. Because, to me, the Vince-Steve storyline from Breakdown to 15, in my opinion, is the greatest WrestleMania story arc ever. From when he lost the title to that Kane Taker thing at Breakdown in September, all the way till he beat Rock at WrestleMania 15, in my opinion, is the greatest WrestleMania story arc of all time. So as we giggle, though, Chris, the Raging Climax is actually a pretty damn good tagline. It actually is.
We can thank Vince Russo for that.
Probably. I'm sure he mentioned that too. I'm sure he did come up with that. Here's an interesting one. I mean, some people. This one, I think, also depends on what era you were born in. But Chris, best venue?
Without a question, Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, you must have grown up in the. I think we had this conversation. You definitely grew up in my era. There's no doubt.
Oh yeah. Johnny
kind of did too, but I know sometimes he thinks a little differently than I do. Your favorite venue?
Again, partial. Growing up on the East Coast, it's MSG.
It's the Garden. No, it's the Garden. Yep. We may never see it there again, and that, as much as the football stadium thing's nice, that really torques me to no end. To no end that we'll never see a WrestleMania at Madison Square Garden again, and that sucks. But, unfortunately, you can't fit 104,000 people into Madison Square Garden.
I will say I think the runner-up is Chicago, though.
Chicago always has awesome shows. Well, the Allstate, I mean, Rosemont's Rosemont, man. It's Rosemont. I wish I wish Willie were here because he would hop in on that too. It's Rosemont. I do have some partials though. I love the Astrodome because I thought that looked fucking amazing on TV. Kudos to fucking the one time I actually give credit to Bucktooth Kevin Dunn because he actually made the Astrodome look pretty sweet that night. Maybe it's Swegler. Maybe I'll give Swegler the credit. or Kerwin. But anyway, Safeco. Safeco looked pretty nice.
That actually looked awesome.
Safeco was pretty awesome.
Yeah,
Safeco was a pretty awesome venue. I was at the Garden for 20. But yeah, there's a decent amount. And as I said, I know I'm being partial because I was there, but I thought MetLife was fantastic. And I would go to MetLife again in a heartbeat for a Mania, no doubt about it. There's also best WrestleMania entrances. That's a tough one to think of. I'm going to hold off on that one because you can't include Taker because after a while, Taker's entrances all seem the same. So we'll hold off on that one. And obviously, a lot of people are... This one was more split than I thought. But Chris, today's entry was, as I mentioned, best opening matches. What do you think?
Yeah, it was Brett versus Owen for me.
Yeah. I tell you something, though. Johnny, you concur?
Oh, I don't think there's really a question. I mean, it's Brett Owen.
It's interesting. I agree. However, number one on the list was Daniel and Triple H from 30. Believe it or not. Now, that match is superb. For me, it'll always be Brett Owen. Gotta be. So anyway, guys and fans, check out the Listomania. We're going to, again, do one every day between now and April 1st. The first nine are up today. Again, was greatest WrestleMania opening matches. So more to come. You guys, you see in the pattern, we're kind of doing them as the show is going on. You know, opening package, credits, venue, kind of like that. We have a method to our madness here at PleaseBeNation.com. The honor roll continued today. The honor roll, Ring of Honor's 50 Greatest Wrestlers Ever, Part 2, 100 to 51. So the first two installments, we kind of did the honorable mentions, and that's what we did today as well. And then starting tomorrow, or starting with the next installment, we will dive into Ring of Honor's actual 50 Greatest. Prediction, looking ahead, Johnny, who is the greatest Ring of Honor wrestler of all time, in your opinion?
That's a tough one. I'm going to go with CM Punk.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Chris?
Yeah, Punk sounds good. I could give Mr. Kevin Steen a little nudge as well.
Yeah.
He was pretty good.
Got to give your props to Danielson, or Daniel Bryan, or whatever you want to call him at that point. I mean, he was there in the beginning, and his man, you know, the guy never disappointed. Joe definitely belongs on that list. There's a few guys, so I'm looking forward to seeing what the final tally is, but... check that out on PleaseBeNation.com. Today they did 100 to 51, so more honorable mentions before we get into the actual 50. The excellent WWE Network adventure continued. Today it's the July 4th, 1985 episode of Tuesday Night Titans. Glenn Butler with his Wednesday walk around the web. And as we mentioned, the other part of the Ring of Honor role as well, 166 to 101. So there were 166 wrestlers. They did 166 to 101, and then part two, they did 100 to 51. So the next installment will begin the top 50. JR and I did our Vintage Vault refresh. The newest one up is the August 8th, 1994 episode of Monday Night Raw. Mr. Bayless has your Raw rundown. And then on Monday night, JR and I did episode 440 of the Place to Be podcast, the second episode ever of Saturday Night's Main Event, from October 5th, 1985. So check that out. Speaking of Mr. Bayless, I'm going to give the right Brian credit here. Brian Meyer does a little, one of our chats, he's doing a scoreboard of which week had the better show, Raw or SmackDown. 35 weeks in now, he had SmackDown winning this week, barely. And his tally right now is Raw, SmackDown 21 and Raw 12. And of course, I'll keep doing that. I'll keep mentioning that as we do the episodes. So there you go, PleaseBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. You can click on the right-hand side. You can check out JR's and my free ebooks. Of course, you can click on the Amazon link. And yeah, check out a lot of great stuff on the site, all of our podcasts, including the full catalog of the now retired but still fantastic Titans of Wrestling. But, of course, check out all the other great shows as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. All right, guys, we talked about Raw. Let's now go to the other side of the ledger. Let's talk SmackDown. Yesterday's episode, we finally have our match for WrestleMania on that side for their title. Bray Wyatt will defend the WWE Championship against Randy Orton. So the Rumble winner does cash in, even though it took 4 weeks of bullshit to do it. AJ Styles got dicked around. He won like 5 number one contenders things, and in the end, he didn't even get it. Johnny, I'll start with you. Did that get just too convoluted? As cool as it was, the visual of, you know, the cabin burning and Sister Abigail and all that jazz, did that just get too convoluted after a while? Did it take them too long to serpentine to this point, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the issue is this. This story was more about getting to AJ Shane than it was about Bray and Orton. So I think that was the whole issue. They didn't quite know how to get to AJ Shane, so they incorporated the Wyatt, the whole Wyatt family storyline into it. And, you know, it's fine, but it had too many twists and turns that kind of didn't make sense.
I agree. Like, technically, I guess he did kind of abdicate. I like how Shane had to use that word. I'm surprised we didn't have abeyance. His Rumble title shot, and then he kind of took it back, and then he had to wrestle for it back, whatever the hell that means. What did you think, Chris? Did you think that what do you think of Johnny's assessment that really the Orton-Bray story was just a secondary piggyback to get to AJ and Shane?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think when WrestleMania comes and goes, you're going to find that AJ Shane probably has a higher place on the card than Orton Wyatt. I saw a recent promo poster, and of course, who's near front and center but Shane McMahon himself with AJ Styles way in the back. Can hardly see him. But I think that's what they were shooting for. But, you know, the thing is also that they knew it was going to be Orton Wyatt for the title, you know, the whole time. And it was just a TV angle, you know, the whole, you know, giving up his title shot and then just really playing Bray the whole time. Mm-hmm. You got to fill, you know, weeks of TV with angles. So, I mean, they had to play that out somehow. And yeah, I was fine with the cabin burning angle, you know. And, you know, the whole Orton pose in front of the burning barn, you know, it was a cool visual, and I didn't have a problem with it. But yeah, ultimately, it's AJ Shane is basically going to be the SmackDown main event match at WrestleMania.
Does that bother you, John?
No, not at all. I feel AJ deserves a main event, and if it takes Shane McMahon to get him one, that's fine.
Is Brock Goldberg last? I know we're going back to Raw, but the reason I'm asking this is, if Brock Goldberg's not last, then what is? Chris?
Yeah, Goldberg Brock Lesnar will be lucky if it goes 3 minutes.
I know.
So I don't think they're going to put that on last. I think they're going to, I hate to say it, but they're going to have Undertaker Roman Reigns go last.
I have a feeling they are too.
Yeah, and that's really going to be it's going to be quite the scene if Roman wins that match and, you know, the response he's going to get at the end of the show, you know.
It's not going to end well. I hate to say it, but I can't think of what else would be. I mean, what else would it be, right? Johnny, what else could it be if not Roman and Taker?
I think it has to be, considering we don't know if this is Taker's last match. I mean, they're not promoting it as that, but I think any Mania could potentially be Taker's last match nowadays. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think he's the biggest name, you know, it holds the most weight. So you kind of have to close with it. Cause like Chris said, I mean, Goldberg Lesnar, nobody wants a 3 minute main event.
No, we can't have that. We're not going to have we can't have a repeat. We can't have a repeat of, the Survivor Series. That's not going to fly. That is not going to fly. What about AJ running out of opportunities? Somebody was saying today that, you know, he's 40. This isn't 2005 AJ Styles. So his first two WrestleMania matches are Chris Jericho, which is a good match, just, you know, forgotten on the card. It was like third, I think, last year on a card that ended, you know, about an hour and a half ago. And then you have Shane this year, which is, I mean, Shane's not going to give him a terrible match. I mean, it's AJ. It's AJ. And there's not a lot of opportunities left for him to have, like, the Mania match. So are they wasting AJ's bullets, Johnny?
No, I don't think so. Because, you know, you're going by 40, that he's 40 years old. Who's to say he doesn't have 3 to 4 more Manias in him? That only puts him at 44 years old.
Right. And a guy who's in exceptional shape.
Exactly. Now, you know, some people are, what is the Mania match for him? I mean, that's a possibility, him and Shane tear the house down, because Shane will take some crazy bumps, and AJ has that ability to kind of pull a good match out of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And let's look at it this way. We never even thought AJ would be at a WrestleMania. So I think these two matches are his Mania moments.
What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, you know, I think AJ, Shane, AJ's going to walk Shane through. It's going to be probably a pretty good match. The thing with AJ, he may be 40 years old. He certainly doesn't wrestle like it. He looks like he still has plenty left in the tank. So, I mean, there's no worries there. He'll be around, you know, for the next few WrestleManias, I believe. And I think with AJ, though, because he's not one of Vince's guys, I think as far as main eventing a Mania, like being last on the card, I don't think we're ever going to get that with AJ. But also at the same time, I think AJ is probably content with stealing the show myself, which is what everyone remembers. And, you know, everyone remembers the show stealing match, and not everyone remembers, you know, what went on last for the most part. So, I mean, I think what we get from AJ now is, you know, it's peak AJ.
Stealing the show. Reminds you of somebody else, John, doesn't it?
Sure does.
Do we ever see it?
I mean, we could hope, but no, I don't think we ever see it. I think Sean's done.
I think he is, too. Fucking shame, isn't it?
Certainly is.
You think he sits home? I think he does. I mean, look, he loves his life. I mean, we know Sean. He loves his life. He loves his kids. He likes the life he has right now. He doesn't even live in Texas anymore. I didn't realize the other day he lives in Florida now. I thought he lived in Texas. But then again, I forgot. He actually goes to the Performance Center sometimes. Imagine if you're I think you and I were talking about this last night. Imagine if you're in the, I mean, Chris, do you imagine if you're this red-faced, you know, noob that walks into the Performance Center? Right, you're just sitting there with your Performance Center T-shirt and your, you know, shorts and your, you know, half beaten up, you know, boots. And today you're like, you know, whoever, fucking Norman Smiley or whoever the hell's there, goes, "All right, guys, we got a special guest today. You're gonna be trained by Shawn Michaels." What do you do? I'd lose my shit. Could you imagine? I mean,
that would be an awesome moment right there. I mean, Mr. WrestleMania getting trained by Shawn Michaels, myself personally, he's number one on my list of all time greats. I don't think I've ever seen a Shawn Michaels match I ever hated. And, you know, to wean from his vast knowledge of working a match would probably be like the ultimate honor.
Mm-hmm. Do you think we'll ever see Sean AJ.
No. Sean's done. It's a shame. It probably would have been the greatest match of all time. Five, six stars, whatever Meltzer's giving out these days. You know, it would be a hell of a match, but you know, Sean's done. I think he's made it clear that he's done, and he always said he would come back, you know, if he ever needed the money, but I think, as far as in-ring action, he's done.
Shame, isn't it? Ugh, such a shame. I can name a few, and I'm happy you say it, Chris, because I think there are a few Shawn Michaels matches that some people, I don't want to say hate, but I guess it depends on his opponent. I guess that's the way you look at it, right, John? It's more who his opponent is that is the match you would hate, not necessarily him.
Very true.
Yes. If there's two matches, believe, and I can't believe I'm about to say this, and you guys are not drunk, you're not on another show, and this is me. If I never watch either Triple H and Shawn Last Man Standing from Rumble 04 or their cell match from Bad Blood 04 ever again, I'll be perfectly fine. Believe it or not. Those two are ones, they went overboard. But give me SummerSlam 02 every day of the week and twice on Sundays. That's just me. Now, let's talk about the women on SmackDown, because we've talked about how Raw is kind of painted themselves in a corner with three people. Three and a half if you count Dana Brooke, because she hasn't really been used, or maybe four if you count Dana Brooke and Nia Jax as kind of half talent. SmackDown has been a little different. Maybe they don't have that bona fide star power. As a matter of fact, I think it was whoever was on the last show. I believe it wasn't Logan. It was, why am I blanking? Was it Nate that said that it reminded him? Oh, no, it was Andy Helene, I think, that said it. That they treated it almost like the first draft where Raw got all the high price names, even if it was less actual talented workers, whereas SmackDown took the SmackDown 6, where maybe the name power is not quite there, but they're all just unbelievable wrestlers. It is now announced that at WrestleMania, Alexa Bliss, your SmackDown Women's Champion, is going to face everybody. Every woman on the roster is getting a title shot on April 2nd, whatever the hell that means. Is that just a desperate ploy, Chris, to not bother trying to come up with some kind of storyline and, hey, let's just throw all of them in a match? Seems kind of lazy, don't you think?
Yeah, it does a little bit. Because of the limitations of some of the women on the SmackDown side of the roster, we've gone through every iteration of Alexa, Becky, and as far as a proper opponent, I mean, we could have done Alexa, Mickey James. Mm-hmm. We could have done the four-way with the four gals that wrestled on SmackDown this past week. Natalia, Mickey, Becky, Alexa. I mean, that would have been fun. But I think also we got to look at it is that the way Alexa's been cutting her promos, I mean, she's been cutting some good promos, and from a character standpoint, she's, I guess you say, she's gotten a little bit too big for her britches, and this might be a way to kind of take that character down a peg, you know, get her some comeuppance against her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from that viewpoint, I mean, that's an all right matchup as far as I'm concerned.
What would you have done with the SmackDown title situation, Johnny, with these women?
I probably would have went with Alexa versus Mickey. I think that's a money match right there. It's just you'd have to get position one of them more as a face. But other than that, because you already ran through Alexa Becky. And I think it's also, I don't know if it's laziness, but Mania likes to get everybody on the show. They want to give everybody
True.
Their, you know, and I think that might be what's going on here.
Okay. I can see that. That's true. The interesting thing here is who walks out of. Do they keep pushing Alexa? Or is this another way to get Becky the belt back? Or does Mickey win it? Kind of a nostalgia run. I'm curious. We'll talk more about that in 3 weeks when we do the preview. But I'm curious where they'll go with that after that. All right. The storyline, believe it or not, that I am enjoying thoroughly, and maybe because it's one-sided, is between The Miz and Maryse against John Cena and Nikki Bella. I never thought I'd enjoy a storyline with a Bella in it, but if you didn't watch SmackDown this week, it's a crime because that segment was really good. But if you didn't watch Talking Smack this week, you really are missing out. The Miz cut one of I mean, that's his show. It should be called Talking Miz because every time he comes on, it's awesome. No pun intended. In fact, this week, you could tell that Maryse was trying hard not to laugh or bust out while Miz was cutting this fantastic promo. That's not all. He even stole Dolph Ziggler's girlfriend. It was like just so funny. It was absolutely hysterical. What do you think of this reality, Chris, of this storyline with Miz, Cena, and the girls?
Yeah, I think Miz is definitely the one who has made this angle entertaining. He's just cutting awesome promos. Checking out Talking Smack, you know, I wish a lot of what happened on that show would carry over into the actual SmackDown Live. You would get a lot of good character development. These guys, you know, it seems to have some kind of weird combination of kayfabe and reality, you know, a little bit of both, but I'm with you. I'm not a huge Bella fan. I don't watch Total Divas. I've never checked out Total Bellas, and I really think this angle is being played up to be, you know, taped for the Total Bellas show. Mm-hmm. How we think it's going to play out, and I don't really care for that, you know. But the way the angle is going right now is getting some pretty good build. I mean, so it is definitely going to be one of the more, I think, entertaining matches on the card. It may not be the greatest match, but, I mean, it's definitely got the story behind it that's, you know, going to make it, you know, very watchable.
Mm. Yeah, I think so, too, and I think it's a perfect thing for Cena. He's out of the title picture, all that kind of crap, and I'm sure they're going to win the match. I'm sure Nikki's going to pin Maryse. That's my pick. But, Johnny, I've got to give Cena credit here. I got to give him credit because he's getting torched. Torched! And if you're a Cena hater, you're eating this shit up. Yeah, his whole life is plastic. You know? As is his wife's boobs. I mean, Miz is torching him. I mean, I got to give Cena his props. He could be a real douche and probably be like, nope, can't go there. unless he's not supposed to. Miz is doing it anyway, which is even better. But obviously, this is helping not just whether you want to say this is bullshit or not. It's actually not only helping SmackDown, but it's also helping the two fucking shows, Total Divas, Total Bellas, Total Everything. What do you think of The Miz? He's pretty damn awesome. Awesome. I mean, he's carrying this right now. And Cena, I mean, what do you say back to him? You know?
I completely agree. Miz is definitely kind of carrying this angle, and he's making an angle that I think a lot of us didn't care about. We're slightly intrigued by it now to see what he's going to say next. You got to give Cena some credit here because he's going with it. But let's remember back. He went places where he shouldn't have gone with The Rock. So now it's just being turned around on him.
That's
the build-up to the first match. And I think Cena's okay with it because Cena's always seems like he's okay with bringing this stuff up. And I don't think it ever bothers him.
Because I like when Miz said on SmackDown when he goes, we weren't allowed to talk about this relationship until it served him. It's like so great.
I think the most intriguing thing about talking smack, and I don't know if you guys caught it, was when he told Daniel Bryan, "You can't wrestle," and Bryan said, "Only for a year and a half," or something to that.
Yeah, I know. I know. Fascinating. What'd you think of that? Did you catch that, Chris?
Yeah, I caught that. I think that's part of that reality aspect of talking smack that comes in. I mean, basically, these guys are shooting from the hip, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
And like I said, it's a weird combination of kayfabe and reality where they're trying to stay in character, but they're also, you know, telling some truths. And I know, we all know that, you know, Daniel Bryan didn't want to stop wrestling. You know, I hate to say it, we'll let that see where it goes, let that play out. Personally, I don't think we're going to see Daniel Bryan in a WWE ring again, because Vince isn't going to let it happen for, you know, he doesn't want to be responsible for anything that might happen to Bryan should he get back in the ring. I mean, the negative media coverage there would just, you know, destroy him. Mm-hmm. But, it would be quite interesting, yeah, but I don't know. I don't know if we're going to see it on WWE television. To be honest,
I don't know if we will either, and that's a shame. But here's the thing: I don't know what they talk about it on Total Divas. I don't know if they really get into it on Total Bellas. But I'm sure it still bothers Daniel Bryan that he might be ready to go, but the company is not letting him. And I think that's just because they don't want to have another issue with every time he's back, oh my God, we have to give Daniel Bryan every belt in the fucking company kind of thing. So I wonder if that's what they're doing. They're holding back because they're afraid of their inability to actually... You want to turn Roman Reigns heel? There you go. I mean, they tried it at Fastlane, 2 years ago, and it didn't work. Fascinating how both shows are working right now. Now, before we move on to the final bit, let's talk about the cruiserweights. Now, there was a rumor, maybe we started it or maybe we're not sure how it worked, but the cruiserweights were going to get the ladder match on April 2nd, the cruiserweight belt, because it looks like it's going to be Dean Ambrose and Baron Corbin for the IC belt, and we already have, obviously, Owens and Jericho for the US belt. But if you watched... I haven't watched 205 Live yet, so I don't know if they've advanced anything. But if you watch Raw Monday, it seems like Neville has a new number one contender. And that's another one of my favorite guys in the whole world. And that is Austin Aries, who's now back from his orbital bone injury. Although I don't want him to stop being an announcer, because he's really good. What do you think they'll do, Chris? Will we have Neville versus Aries as a singles match at Mania for the Cruiserweight belt, or do you think they'll do a ladder match?
Yeah, I think they're leaning towards an Aries-Neville one-on-one. You know, Aries on Raw, he was quite awesome. I love how he throws to his package. You know,
yes.
He's got to show his package. And,
literally,
and then the interview in the middle of the ring with Neville just pretty much sold it. I really think that's the way they're going to go, glad to see it because it's going to be a hell of a match.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, John? Aries Neville 1-on-1 or the latter?
Yeah, no, I definitely think they're going with Aries Neville 1-on-1. And Aries is, between Neville and Aries, this may be what finally gets that division fully over.
I think so, too. But do they leave all the other guys off? I mean, you can't stick them in the Battle Royal, the Andre Battle Royal. They'll get fucking killed. Can you really leave all the rest of the guys off?
That's a tough one. I mean,
I know, right?
What else could you do with them?
I have a feeling, even though the Aries Neville thing started, I still think they're going to do a ladder match.
I think maybe you have like a 6 or 8 man tag on the pre-show. It'll get them their payday.
And yeah. I think you could throw them in some of them in the battle royal and, you know, have them bump around for some of the bigger guys for some cool visuals. I mean, that's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I just hate to see them get wasted, but you guys got a good point. Because, I mean, I think Neville Aries would be a fantastic match. I really do. Okay, well, time will tell. We'll see what happens. I mean, they got a few shows to do that. So, again, I didn't get a chance to watch 205 Live yet, so I don't know if anything was. Did either of you guys watch 205 Live this week?
I have not gotten a chance yet.
Okay.
I'm going to watch it tomorrow. So maybe something advanced. All right, guys. Well, fantastic assessment of our two shows. NXT's kind of cruising along right now. As mentioned, they really haven't announced any matches yet for TakeOver Orlando, but I think we're guaranteed to see the Rude Nakamura rematch, which I'll take any day of the week. And then I think we'll see, because it's kind of already set, Asuka will face Ember Moon, and I think that's where Ember Moon wins the belt, and I think we'll see Asuka move over. All right, before we go, let us do our eulogy for one of the original studs of the business, because it was yesterday, at the age of 68, outlaw Ron Bass passed away. His real name was Ronald Hurd. He was born December 21st, 1948, in Harrisburg, Arkansas, and he was living in Tampa when he passed away. He started wrestling as Ron Bass in 1971 in the Gulf Coast Territory. Throughout the 1970s, he performed primarily in the NWA territories. He was known as Cowboy Ron Bass, Sam Oliver Bass, and Outlaw Ron Bass, depending on which territory he was working at the time. In the early 1980s, he wrestled down in Florida and Jim Crockett Promotions, frequently teaming with Black Bart as the Long Riders in both promotions. I love that tag team. He also teamed and feuded with Barry Windham in Florida. Dr. G told me that he was big over as a heel in Florida. Big over in Florida. Bass's feud with Windham over a saddle given to Bass by Dusty Rhodes led to Windham losing a loser leave town match to Bass and coming back to wrestle as the masked Dirty Yellow Dog. Then, of course, they kind of gloss over his Crockett, but if we remember, he was in a feud with Black Bart leading up to Starrcade 85. He beat Black Bart, and then he got 5 minutes with J.J. Dillon in a bull rope match, of which J.J. Dillon actually won. In 1987, Bass, using the Outlaw name, went to the World Wrestling Federation, where he voiced challenges to the likes of World Wrestling Federation champion Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake. Bass quickly settled into a role in the mid-card position, wrestling against Hillbilly Jim, Lanny Poffo, and Sam Houston. Later on, he was part of the five-man team captained by the Honky Tonk Man at the inaugural Survivor Series pay-per-view, Thanksgiving Day 1987. He was eliminated by Beefcake. He also participated in the very first Royal Rumble and the 20-man Battle Royal at WrestleMania 4. He was eliminated at the latter event by the Junkyard Dog. A feud between the two began in the months after Mania, after Bass choked and dragged the dog with his bullwhip, Miss Betsy, in a sneak attack on Wrestling Challenge. At the 1988 King of the Ring tournament, Bass qualified for the final after beating a young Shawn Michaels, but was paid by Ted DiBiase to fake an injury. Bass began a feud with Beefcake in August of 88, gouging Beefcake's head open with his spurs, Brett and Bart. I didn't know he named his spurs. Did you know that, John?
I did not.
I had no idea. Chris, did you?
I know he named the bullwhip. I didn't know about the spurs.
Chris, did you know he named his spurs?
Oh, yeah, that angle's still fresh in my mind. I remember that.
Really? I remember the angle, but I don't remember him naming his spurs. That's funny. Of course, as everyone knows, the attack caused Beefcake to miss his scheduled IC championship match against the Honky Tonk Man at SummerSlam 88. Of course, that led to the fucking awesome 20-second win by the Ultimate Warrior, which was a better moment anyway. Bass and Honky co-captained a five-man contingent against the team captain by Beefcake and the Ultimate Warrior at the second Survivor Series in November of 88. Bass and teammate Greg Valentine were eliminated by Warrior in succession in the final minute. On the January 7th, 1989 edition of Saturday Night's Main Event, Bass lost to Beefcake via sleeper hold in a hair versus hair match. He competed in the 1989 Royal Rumble without his hair. Bass's feud with Beefcake was scrapped, and he was used mainly as a preliminary wrestler and left the WWF shortly thereafter. He wrestled in the Indies before retiring in 1991 due to the injury sustained over his career. In 2005, Bass made an appearance at Wrestle Reunion on January 29th and teamed with Larry Zbysko to defeat Barry Windham and Mike Rotundo. Bass and Brian Blair both starred in the film Silent Times, directed by Jeff Blanchett and Christopher Anino, which will be released in 2018. Bass plays a 1920s professional football coach named Coach Joseph Arcarese. Interesting. Personal. After retiring, he returned to Tampa, Florida, where he golfed, became religious, and earned his bachelor's degree from Arkansas State University. Good for him. Subsequently, he worked in sales in Florida's construction market. Could you imagine? You better buy this condo. I'm going to give you Miss Betsy. Could you imagine? He should carry Miss Betsy around while he was selling, like, timeshares. He also became an Amway salesman in the Tampa area. He had one son. In July of 2016, he was part of that – oh, God, he was part of that terrible class action suit where that Constantine Kyros, that ambulance chaser, put like 500 wrestlers on a class action lawsuit. Half of them didn't even wrestle for the company. What a joke. And he was hospitalized due to a burst appendix, died from complications of surgery. So there is your obituary on the great outlaw Ron Bass. Plenty of championships throughout the world, all Japan, Central States, mostly tags. A lot of belts from Florida, obviously Mid-Atlantic, Tri-State, Pacific Northwest. Any memories in general that you have, Chris, of outlaw Ron Bass?
Well, yeah, coming up, you know, I'm an 80s guy, but I didn't have much exposure to NWA, Crockett, or anything like that where I was from at the time. But I did collect wrestling magazines, and so, you know, I read about him often in, like, the match results section or the rankings. And my first exposure to him was when he hit the WWF there in, I guess it was 87.
Mm-hmm.
And the Beefcake feud and losing his hair on Saturday Night's Main Event. I mean, that's what I remember him best as, although, I mean, he had an established career well before that. I didn't get to see much of that. But, you know, I did relive his match with Black Bart on the network recently.
Mm-hmm.
And, capable, you know, worker. He wasn't horrible. Definitely more of a brawler type, when you have something like, you know, the Beefcake feud is the one that stands out most in my mind, and it's just, you know, just a little piece of your childhood floating away into the ether. So long, Mr. Bass.
That's right, Johnny. What are your memories of Outlaw?
My first real memory of him, like where it still sticks, is definitely the Beefcake angle, and that was a pretty hot angle for the time. You know?
Well, yeah, I remember when they did the whole spurs on the face, they had to put a big red X over Beefcake's face because he couldn't see any blood.
Mm-hmm. So that was it. And I mean, as I got older, and I searched out other territories, and I've seen some of the stuff in Florida, and you know, he was definitely a solid heel down there, like you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And, I always remember him as being a solid heel. Nothing crazy stand out about him, but, you know, just a good guy to have on the card, he's definitely, like I said, solid guy.
I agree. I mean, he was just a solid guy who just was a good worker. To me, the first thing I remember of him was the feud with Black Bart before Starrcade 85. I remember that in the bull rope match. And then I remember watching some Florida tapes that the doctor had. And I remember when he was talking about the feud with Windham. And then I remember the tag team with Black Bart. So I remember most of that stuff. So rest in peace, Outlaw Ron Bass, one of the coolest cowboy wrestlers in history. So we already have quite a number of deaths. Speaking of, before we go, I meant to mention this during the Raw segment, but it just came to my mind. We'll talk more about this on the WrestleMania special, but Johnny, your moment has finally arrived.
This is true.
I wish we could hear Sade's smooth operator that Friday night, but we will not. Of course, joining the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2017 is the iconic, ravishing Rick Rude, one of the greatest heels in the history of the business. And a guy who honestly never had a bad entrance theme. Never. Sade, Smooth Operator, and then the stripper song in WWF, which was fucking great. And then pretty much every theme he had in WCW was awesome as well. Chris, give me like your two favorite Rick Rude matches.
Probably the best one I've seen was the Iron Man match with Ricky Steamboat. Was a Beach Blast 92.
Yep, Beach Blast 92.
Yeah, that one stands out first and foremost in my mind. And then probably one of his matches with Sting. I think maybe it was a short match. There was a clash where he won the U.S. title.
Mm. Yes, end of 91, yeah. I think. Yep.
Yeah, and not a long match, but I think just the whole progression of that angle, after Sting got those boxes, and I think, was it Luger attacked him and injured his knee, and I might be getting that all mixed up. I can't remember.
No, I think the boxes wasn't it Abdullah? Wasn't it Abdullah the Butcher? Wasn't he in the box?
Cactus in one, Abdullah, then Luger in another, but I think the last box was delivered on that same clash.
I think so.
And, Root, of course, took advantage of the injury, and, they took Sting away in the ambulance. And then he miraculously came back for his match, and Root just wasted him and took the title from him.
Hmm. Yeah. I'm not sure. I think I know which ones Johnny's going to pick, but I know you have more than two, Johnny, but give me your two.
Well, definitely the Iron Man. I still think that's Rude's greatest match. Now, the other one is interesting because I hated it as a kid, but as an adult, I love it, which is WrestleMania 5 and him beating the Warrior. So those are my two favorite matches. I mean, there's a lot of great Rude moments. Probably my favorite.
More than enough.
Yeah.
Summer Slam, Sweat Hogs.
Yeah, tremendous. Cheryl Roberts on his tights.
Yes,
and people forget his pretty cool run he had in ECW where he was.
In '97.
Yeah, he was just playing mind games with Shane Douglas the whole time. I just thought it was such a great angle,
and he was an announcer. He actually did some of the weekly shows he did with Joey, and he was pretty fucking great. My two favorites, definitely the Iron Man with Steamboat, but still my favorite match of all time from him. And your same guy, Johnny, different pay-per-view, even though he lost, the match with him and Rip Warrior at SummerSlam 89 is still one of my, cause SummerSlam 89 is one of my favorite shows of all time, but, Rude and Warrior at SummerSlam 89 is probably one of my favorite matches of all time. However, even though it wasn't him alone in the match, we, all three of us cannot discount, of course, Sting Squadron and the Dangerous Alliance in the War Games at Wrestle War 92. That match is fucking amazing. And I think Rude definitely deserves credit for that. So we love the Ravishing One, and we'll get more into the Hall of Fame class on the next show because I'm sure we're going to be added, because right now we have Kurt Angle, Rock and Roll Express, Teddy Long, Beth Phoenix, and now the great Ravishing Rick Rude. So there's probably going to be at least two more additions. So
I think you forgot DDP.
Oh, and DDP. My bad. Sorry, DDP. And I'm actually looking at my DDP yoga DVDs. So that was stupid by me. Yes. Sorry, DDP. Sorry, I didn't feel the bang. No self high five for me. All right, guys. This has been fantastic. You're both awesome. Chris, continued being awesome in everything you do on the podcast and on PlaceBeNation.com. You will have you back. Johnny, you and I will be on again because you and I are going to do a special edition of the main event, not the WrestleMania preview. I'll get to that in a minute. But you and I are going to do, as far as we know at the moment, this could change, but you and I plan on doing a main event reaction show for NXT TakeOver Orlando. So check that out on the night of NXT. We're going to have an NXT TakeOver Chris, my man KZ and the guys will do the regular WrestleMania reaction show, but Johnny and I are going to do the NXT TakeOver reaction show that Saturday night, so looking forward to that. Guys, it's been a pleasure. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we will not be back in 2 weeks. We'll be back in 3 weeks because we want to load up the week leading into WrestleMania with all of the heavyweight podcasts. So we will have that week, we will have both clotheslines and headlines and main event. Huge WrestleMania previews. I'm going to try and load the room with as many people as I can. We will preview TakeOver Orlando. We will talk about the Hall of Fame class, and we will fully give you our preview and predictions for WrestleMania 33. And there'll be main event the following week. So there won't be one in 2 weeks, but we'll do back-to-back weeks because I just want to do everything. So we're going to do the preview and then the following week the recap. So enjoy the build. For Chris Jordan, for Johnny Reckless, I am Scott Crisola. You have been in the main event. Enjoy the road. We will see you WrestleMania week. Enjoy.